Monday Night Travel. I guess these days when you talk about Fiji, you tend to talk about the political machinations. It's been pretty ugly since the overthrow of the elected government and the installation of the military regime in Fiji. There is plenty of things to do outside the major resorts and hotels of Fiji. And in fact, Rod Imey has just been on an adventure in paradise, similar to that 60s television series featuring Gardner McKay. It was an extraordinary adventure. And he's been to an area around the Koro Sea, which is adjacent to Fiji. And there has been a cruise into the Northern Lau group, part of the Fiji Island group. And quite an adventure, and we'll explore that together tonight. Hey, Rod.
Hi, Tony. Great to be back.
Now, let's talk a little bit about this neck of the woods. It's very multicultural in its own way.
It is multicultural, and it's unusually so because we've got populations which began on other islands in part of the Pacific. We've got Tuvalu, we've got the former Gilbert and Ellis group, we've got Tongans, all come from different parts of the Pacific and for various reasons ended up on islands as part of the Fiji group.
Because when you look at the Fiji group, you know, there's probably 100-odd islands, but very few of them are actually inhabited.
About a third, I'm told. So the theory was that the colonial people who had trouble with some of the other populations were looking to the Fiji chiefs to, in fact, their islands were purchased outright to accommodate these displaced populations. Mm. So on one of the islands we sailed to, a place called Rambi, pronounced Rambi and spelt R-A-B-I in the Fijian fashion, we've got a population of Micronesians. And they come from an island called Banaba, or Ocean Island, and their island was completely trashed through phosphate mining. So in a long...
Very similar to Nauru.
Very similar to Nauru. And in a convoluted and quite controversial story, they ended up on Rambi. It's a long story. But and they took themselves and their their Micronesian culture and live a happy life on Rambi. And the same thing to a certain degree on Kiowa, where we've got a Polynesian population, small population, from Tuvalu, through mainly because of overpopulation and the fact that Tuvalu may not be here for more
Very
than
much
a couple,
longer.
A couple of decades with rising sea levels.
Indeed. This is an opportunity for you to actually see things on a very small scale because it's not a huge ship, any of the three companies that operate in the area. They're 50 to 100 people, and it doesn't overwhelm the local population. It allows you to see it firsthand.
No, Tony, I think the small ship, what's so-called small footprint travel, is perfectly suited to this kind of thing because in these areas because there is no tourism infrastructure to speak of. I mean, when I first went to Fiji, it was 1971. I was in short pants and I was on the P&O Himalaya.
Mm.
And 1,500 people went ashore for all kinds of choreographed and contrived cultural performances. And now you're seeing it in a very natural state where people are the local residents are doing what they do and used to do for hundreds of years. And it's a real... a natural and very rewarding experience to have these people greet you this way.
And quite often you'll run into a schools group who do, a lot of cultural things that explains exactly where they're from and what they're about.
Well, the joy and the spontaneity of the children at the schools is a really, it's a wonderful thing to behold. And part of the philosophy of all of these three cruise companies is to bring things to the schools, like stuff that they can't get, books and building materials for the classrooms and teaching aids and all that kind of stuff. So, and in a reciprocal gesture, we get the kids will come and put on cultural performances. And these aren't just little song and dances. These kids really get into it.
Yep.
And get dressed up in the native costume and stuff, and it's really quite a show.
The remoteness of these islands is an important thing to understand. I suppose they're serviced by ferries every now and again, but there is not a lot of input, so they have to be largely self-sufficient.
They are largely self-sufficient, Tony. There is a scheduled ferry service. I use that word in inverted commas because when I asked about it in the Lau group, they just looked at me like, yeah, right. But I have seen the ferry. It does certainly service Tavayuni off the coast of Vanua Levu, the second largest island. So it does exist and it does work, but I think they've decided that it's not really economical to get over to the Lau group very often, and it's only serviced by a weekly light plane, a twin otter, which carries 18 people in a suitcase.
I mean, do they have a currency? They use the Fiji currency,
it's
obviously.
It's all Fiji dollars, and New Zealand are pretty much interchangeable. New Zealand dollars and Australians dollars are welcome pretty much everywhere as well. So, yeah, these people do pretty much self-sufficient. They are very good at fishing. The farming is very good with root crops and so forth, bananas. They do a lovely job of that. So when we visit these places, they'll put on quite a spread for us as well. Coconuts too, beautiful green coconut juice.
So essentially you'd be eating on the ship a lot, but, supplementing it with the traditional stuff.
Yeah, look, the food on the ships, on this particular one, the Blue Lagoon, the food was really good. Now, I've had reservations about food on the ships in Fiji before, but this was really on the mark. Now, the cooks, and they're all Fijian crew, supplement the menu with locally acquired produce, which they'll get ashore from the local markets. And, of course, there's fish and there's meat, goat, which, of course, is popular throughout the Fiji Islands. So there's stuff that we're familiar with, like beef and so forth, but interspersed with locally acquired product, which is great. I loved it.
The theme seems to be soft adventure, an opportunity for you to get out and really enjoy the local, I guess, the sea life as well as the land.
Yeah, look, the cultural interaction is an important part of it, but there's a lot more to it than that. If you need to get a bit of exercise, especially with all the food they give you, so there's some decent trekking available. One of the ships, Little Tui Tai, carries mountain bikes, and there's plenty of opportunities for snorkeling and scuba diving. I did mention walking and just swimming and snorkeling. So there's plenty of active things to do.
The history of the Lau Group itself would have been fairly turbulent as well. There was a fair few standoffs, as they say.
Yeah, look, I'm not a great student of Fijian history, but I certainly learned a lot more while I was out there. And the Lau Group is on the Tongan frontier, and some of the characters we've got, the Bainimaramas of today, we've got the Tongan renegade warlord Mafu and his Fiji counterpart Kakabau, quite often squaring off with their warriors in various parts around the Koro Sea. And there was a big battle, and I do mean a big battle, just off the coast of Tavayuni in the middle of the 19th century, which pretty much settled that whole situation, and Mafu was sent packing. So, quite an interesting story.
There was a fair bit of colonial stuff happening, particularly around the First World War. Germany controlled, parts of New Guinea and parts of the Pacific as well. And you came across a little reflection of that.
Look, I did, Tony, and you know how I love all those things. We do forget that Germany had quite a presence in the South Pacific. They were in Samoa, as you say, in Papua New Guinea.
And after they lost the First World War, they lost a lot of the Pacific Territory.
They lost a lot. They rolled the dice and they lost a lot. But when I was visiting Levuka, the old colonial capital, which, by the way, is a beautiful little spot and plugging for UNESCO listing, we stopped in one of these old white man's drinking clubs called the Ovalau Club. And hanging up there on the wall, quite interestingly, was a World War I German naval ensign. And I'm going, that's a flag. And I'm going, what's that doing here? Yeah. And then there's a couple of etchings of these prominent people on the wall, and they said, this guy's got a German naval hat on. So I asked our guide, Alan, and he said, oh, that's Count Felix von Luckner. He was a German sea raider. And I'm going, oh, what a fantastic story. Anyway, the short story of this was that he was a sea raider in the First World War against the commerce ships that were plying the routes across the Pacific. He was one of the old style, like von Richthofen, and was very much a gentleman warrior. And the ships that he sunk, he made sure all the crew were evacuated and put ashore safely. There was one guy got killed in an accident, and he was very remorseful of that, but he sunk 20 or 30 ships and never lost a life. Anyway, his own ship was wrecked in a storm in Tahiti, and he put his men and himself into a longboat and sailed all the way across the Pacific like William Bligh did, and ended up in Fiji. And in a wonderful twist, he was captured by the local constable and a couple of natives on a fishing boat with a coconut trunk rigged to look like a deck gun. So he bluffed von Lucknow and all his crew and tricked them into surrendering with a coconut
Speaking of Governor Bligh, there is areas here called Bligh Water, and I take it that that is named after the good captain.
Yes, I believe that Bligh sailed through there, if not on the Bounty, then certainly on his way back in the whale boat, on his way to Jakarta after the mutiny.
A lot of these are structured by leaving the main port of Fiji and heading up into the Lau group. It's about a week to cover the region?
A week is a typical length for any of the three companies' products. Yeah, look, the Blue Laguna leaves from Lautoka, Captain Cook from Suva, or from, beg your pardon, it's incorrect, from Denarau Island near Nandi, and Tuitai out of Savu Savu on the Vanua Levu.
Mm. And I take it most of these ships are able to get in fairly close to the shoreline.
Yeah, look, they're all small ships. I mean, ranging from little Tuitai with 25 passengers through to Blue Lagoon 70-something and Captain Cook with 150. They're all still small ships of a couple of thousand tonnes at the most. And so we can get up close. If we have to anchor, and we did a few times, it's not too far away, and we go ashore in the tenders or the Zodiacs to make a beach landing. So, yeah, it's really good. And, I mean, you can imagine, Tony, that if you had a big ship, you know, with 2,000 people out in these waters, not only is it difficult to navigate, but if you put 2,000 people ashore, you just smother the whole place.
Sure. And it sounds like it's a very genuine experience. It's not manufactured for the occasion.
Look, there is a degree of that, but it's all done with the consent of the locals, and it's a really good, sustainable sort of a tourism practice. It's a delicate, gentle thing that doesn't interrupt their general lifestyle normally. It's a couple of days a year where they get to put on a bit of a festival for the cruise ships that are coming in, and you know, every other day of the year they go about their normal duty. So it's not as if the whole place is transformed at the behest of tourism. It's really good that way.
It's a great way to run into at least three cultures: Micronesian, Melanesian and Polynesian, and all within a week.
Yep, all on the same boat, and otherwise you'd have to travel all around the Pacific to see those cultures. So it is that then there's the history, then there's the activity, and if you like your scuba diving and snorkeling, there's plenty to do. So I'd encourage you to do that, especially if you're wanting to have another look at Fiji, you know, to try and just give yourself a different look at a place that seems to conjure all those things that we've talked about earlier on. And quite frankly, Australians don't give a damn about the political situation. They're going there in droves. Couldn't care who's in power.
Well, you're not going into Suva anyway, are you? You're scouting and travelling to the islands.
No, you don't go to Suva in any of these things. And, I mean, Suva's a place in itself. If you want to go to, that's fine. But, we're on the west coast, and you can travel down to see some of the other resorts if you want, around the Coral Coast and so forth.
It's a way to go to a remote and delicate place, Adventures in Paradise. We are talking about it with Rod Imey. Thanks, mate, and we'll speak soon.
Always a pleasure, Tony.
Monday Night Travel.
As seen on ABC One, Strike Back is now available on DVD.